We are joined on the air by Tom Jensen, Director of Public Policy Polling, based out of Raleigh. PublicPolicyPolling.com is their website. Tom, thanks for being with us today.
Hey, Aaron. Good to be with you.
So, well, let's actually start by talking not about a public policy polling survey, but about one that was conducted by North Carolina Civitas, which is a more right-leaning organization that just got released earlier this week, I believe, here for North Carolina voters and what they're thinking about not just the president, but also Governor Roy Cooper and the state of the 2018 election. Will they be supporting Democrats or Republicans for the General Assembly or for Congress? What did this poll find, and how is it different from previous findings?
Well, I think one thing that's pretty significant is you find on this poll that voters in North Carolina do not like their Republican president. Donald Trump has a 44% approval rating and a 53% disapproval rating, and they do like their Democratic governor. Roy Cooper has a 56% approval rating and a 34% disapproval rating. So basically, North Carolinians are all living under the same president and governor, and they like the Republican, they like the Democratic governor and they dislike the Republican president. So perhaps against that context, it's not surprising that on this poll, when they asked people how they would vote for the legislature if there was an election today, Democrats have an 8-point lead. 42% of voters say they would vote Democratic if there was an election today. 34% say they'd vote Republican. We've found that for Democrats to actually take control of the legislature, they'd probably have to win the statewide legislative vote by about 14 or 15 points. So even with that 8-point Democratic advantage, you're not really thinking about actually taking control of the legislature. But that would be enough of an advantage to almost definitely let Democrats break the veto-proof majority in the state House and Senate. And at that point, you possibly would have a chance where the diminished Republican majority in the legislature would pass stuff, the governor would veto it, and then they wouldn't be able to override the veto. So you may be headed for a situation where basically nothing would be getting done in state government. And I think a lot of people after the last 7 years would see a state government that couldn't do anything as a step in the right direction.
So this Civitas has done this survey a couple of times already this year, and back in February they did it, asked the same question: if the 2018 election were today, who would you vote for General Assembly? Back in February, it was Democrats 40, Republicans 39. They did it again in May, Democrats 40, Republicans 40. It was a dead heat there a month ago, and then this month it's an 8-point swing for Democrats, so it's 42 to 34. What has happened in the last month to move the dial? Is this an outlier poll, or is this a swing that has a specific referent here?
Well, I think what's happened the last month is the legislature's been in town. Ever since Republicans got control of the legislature in 2011, we've seen this sort of fascinating trend where when the legislature's in town, poll numbers get really bad for Republicans. And then a lot of the time, as it gets further and further away from the legislative session and the stuff that they did gets out of the headlines, then the numbers start to get a little bit better for Republicans. So the key for Democrats this year is going to be having to find some sort of way to kind of sustain this unhappiness that voters are feeling with the Republicans in Raleigh beyond just while the session's going on. And certainly not a coincidence that this has sort of been one of the shorter legislative sessions that we've had over the last 7 years. I think Republicans are very cognizant of the fact that when they are in town and they are in the headlines, that usually doesn't bode very well for their political prospects. So I think they are trying to get out of town pretty quickly before they can dig themselves too deep of a hole.
Other interesting things from this particular survey?
The other piece of it was they also asked about the generic congressional ballot. Mm-hmm. And people said by a 5-point margin, 41 to 36, that they would vote Democratic if there was an election for Congress today. I think that bodes pretty well for the two seats in particular that Democrats are hoping to pick up, the 9th district in suburban Charlotte, where you have Dan McCready running against Mark Harris in what was Robert Pittenger's seat before he lost in the primary. We found that to be a close race, and when you see statewide numbers like this, I think it bodes well for that continuing to be a close race. And then the 13th district in the Triad, where the Republican incumbents Ted Budd and the Democratic challenger is Kathy Manning, I think both of those are going to be the most competitive congressional races that North Carolina has had at the House level, at least since 2012, because really these maps were drawn so that we would never have any competitive House elections. And I think this year is shaping up to be a strong enough Democratic year that you might have at least a little bit competitiveness. The other interesting thing on the poll was the premier statewide race this year is our Supreme Court race between incumbent Republican Barbara Jackson and her Democratic challenger Anita Earls. They found that race tied 35-35 this month, with 29% of voters undecided. But in February, they had had the Republican incumbent up by 12. So it certainly looks like that's shaping up to be a competitive race. But I do think at the end of the day, Democrats are going to be pretty likely to do well in a statewide election this year.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, Public Policy Polling, we've been talking about a survey that was conducted by Civitas in North Carolina. Public Policy Polling hasn't surveyed North Carolina in the last couple of weeks. You did survey, though, voters in Florida and Minnesota and had some pretty interesting findings there, too, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's notable in Florida is there's a lot of talk about all the really tough places Democrats are having to defend Senate seats this year. There's Democratic incumbents up in Montana, North Dakota, Missouri, Indiana, West Virginia, all places that Donald Trump won by at least 20 points in 2016. And that certainly makes taking control of the Senate hard for Democrats. The other state where they're really sort of struggling in the Senate race that doesn't fit that mold is Florida. Longtime Democratic incumbent Bill Nelson's up for reelection. He's being challenged by the Republican governor of Florida, Rick Scott. And we found on a poll that we did there in Florida this week that Nelson's only up 48-46, which in a vacuum, being up against the sitting governor of the state who's relatively popular, 48-46 isn't a bad place to be for Nelson. But when you're thinking about Democrats trying to get control of the Senate, having to protect all the seats they currently hold and play offense on top of that, it's not helpful to Democratic hopes of keeping the Senate that they're clearly going to have to spend a ton of money in Florida, which is one of the most expensive states in the country for campaigning, just to hold on to a Senate seat in a state that Donald Trump only actually won by 1 or 2 points. Like, you expect to have to work hard to defend yourself in the North Dakotas, Montanas, Indianas of the world that Trump won by a ton. But in a year where developments have been mostly positive for Democrats, the fact that this Florida Senate race is shaping up to be so competitive is a little bit more of, I think, a disappointment for Democrats in terms of what they might have hoped to happen in this landscape. So things are actually fine for Democrats overall in Florida. We found that they're up by 5 points in the governor's race, which Democrats haven't won a governor's race in Florida since, I believe, 1994. So that would certainly be a big development to win that, but they are struggling a little bit in the Senate race. The other state that we polled in the last week was Minnesota. It's sort of an interesting situation there. You have the former Republican governor, Tim Pawlenty, who then ran for president and is now running to get back his seat as governor. But we found on a generic ballot question for governor there that the Democratic candidate leads by 7 points, 46-39, and also that Donald Trump is very unpopular in Minnesota. He only has a 43% approval rating, 52% disapprove. But it would be sort of an embarrassment for Pawlenty, I think, to run a disastrous presidential campaign, then try to get back his governor's office and lose that. Although, as I say that out loud, the only other person I can think of losing a disastrous presidential campaign and then losing a disastrous gubernatorial
campaign was
Richard Nixon, and then he got to be president in 2024. So I guess we can, excuse me, in 1968. So we can take our bets now for Tim Pawlenty to resign under the threat of impeachment as president in the year 2030.
I was speaking with Tom Jensen. Going back to the Florida poll, the race between Nelson and Scott, is there something about that particular race that makes it an outlier? Just Rick Scott is particularly popular, or is it something about like the state of Florida that's kind of pushing the other way against the national trend?
Really, Republicans got weak candidates for a lot of the places where they're trying to pick up seats this year. Like in Indiana, they have a former state senator running against Joe Donnelly. In Montana, they have like the state auditor running against John Tester. There's a couple states where they have the attorney general running. In Florida, they have the governor running.
Mm-hmm.
And he, I think, got good reviews from a lot of people who maybe hadn't liked him before for how he handled the hurricane last
mm-hmm.
year. You know, hurricanes will make or break a governor. Pat McCrory was doomed for reelection and then almost got reelected because people were so happy with how he handled the hurricane here. And Rick Scott got very good marks for how he handled the hurricane there. So I think that's the biggest thing that just makes it different is that Republicans got such a high quality candidate there. But the other thing that makes it sort of, I think, a disappointment for Democrats is they're going to have to defend so hard there is Florida is just such an expensive state. I mean, if you have to run a ton of TV advertising in Missoula and Bismarck and Fort Wayne, that doesn't break the bank the way that having to run a ton of TV advertising in Miami and Tampa and Orlando does.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think that Democrats are happy with the situation they're in the other states where they're having to defend Senate seats this year that Trump won narrowly. Sherrod Brown's in good shape in Ohio. Debbie Stabenow's in good shape in Michigan. Bob Casey's in good shape in Pennsylvania. Tammy Baldwin's in good shape in Wisconsin. I think Florida's the one exception to sort of that set of states that Trump won by narrow margins where Democratic senators, you know, are generally looking good in those states except for Florida.
Speaking with Tom Jensen, public policy polling. So let's move away from individual specific polls and look at the issue that everyone's talking about this week, which is the immigration issue and the CBS News report 15 minutes ago that had Trump up on stage trying to stoke up distrust and fear and hatred of illegal immigrants again. And this has been kind of the prevailing thing of his presidency going back even to the very beginning of the presidential campaign. And it's been a significant portion of the support that he has gotten from people across the country have been about this particular issue. But that's a percentage of Trump supporters specifically. Where do Americans in general stand on the larger issue of immigration, but also some of the particular iterations of it that we've seen in the last couple of weeks?
Well, the family separation stuff is very unpopular for Trump. There were four or five national polls about it this week. We found that only 27% of voters, but the polls found that only 27% of voters support the family separation policy. 66% are opposed. And I think what was particularly notable about that particular thing and why you saw Trump backtrack at least a little bit on it was that you didn't see his supporters just march in lockstep with him on it. It was basically a situation where you saw that Democrats were pretty much unanimous in disliking the family separation policy. And then Republicans supported it, but they only supported it by like 10 points. And this was actually an issue where there were a significant number of people who voted for Trump who said that they didn't like what the Trump administration was doing. And that really sets us apart from a lot of other issues, because really most of the contentious things that have happened over the course of the 17 months that Trump's been president has basically been like, if you voted for Trump, you like what he's doing. If you don't like if you didn't vote for Trump, you don't like what he's doing. This family separation policy, along with health care, has been one of the few things where you've really seen a pretty decent kind of split in the Trump base, where a significant number of Trump voters have not gone along with what he wanted to do. And I think that's why you saw a little backtracking this week. It's an interesting thing overall on immigration. Voters are actually pretty liberal on immigration issues. And I've seen several studies this week alluding to the fact that politicians think that voters are a lot more conservative on immigration issues than voters actually are. So there's a disconnect between what politicians sort of think is going to be popular in playing on these issues and then how actual voters feel about them. So it'll be interesting to see how that dynamic plays itself out here in the coming months.
I got to wrap up. We're speaking with Tom Jensen. And again, publicpolicypolling.com is the website to get the latest numbers from PPP, at PPP Polls on Twitter if you want to follow them on social media. But before we go, again, Tom, in addition to being director of public policy polling, is also the Tar Heel baseball super fan. And the Heels just wrapped up their season with a couple of losses in the College World Series. Still a great year for Carolina. First trip to Omaha since 2013. So final thoughts about Tar Heel baseball as they wrap up their season.
Well, it's too bad that the Tar Heels didn't win the College World Series, but a fact that I think is pretty remarkable is that since 2003, we've had 16 freshman classes come in to play UNC baseball, and 15 out of 16 of those freshman classes, if you stayed your 4 years, you got to go play in Omaha. There's only one freshman class in the last 16 years that the team never made it to Omaha over the 4 years that a freshman would have been there. And Coach Fox actually told somebody I know a few years ago that he'd really like to win a national championship, but he wouldn't trade that for the fact that almost everyone who's come through the program during the time that he's coached has gotten that experience of going to play in Omaha, and I think that's pretty cool. UNC just announced this afternoon that Coach Fox has agreed to a contract extension. And one final fact, there's been a lot of debate this week with the Tar Heels losing about whether Mike Fox is a good coach, blah, blah, blah. There have been 56 coaches in the history of college baseball who have won 1,100 games in their career. Out of those 56 coaches, Mike Fox has the eighth best winning percentage out of the 56 college baseball coaches who have ever won 1,100 games. So he's not just the best coach in UNC baseball history, he's really one of the best coaches in college baseball history. And I think sometimes fans don't appreciate that enough. But this is a situation I was thinking, you know, I was thinking about telling Coach Fox congratulations on his contract extension, but it really should be a no-brainer on UNC's end that he deserves that. It's really something where fans should just appreciate that he wants to keep coaching the team.
Tom Jensen, always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks, Aaron. Take care.